till now, on-off signals have been considered for what concerns the level of the signals, high, low. But there is another aspect, another point of view from which they can be taken into account. That is not only the level the signal assumes, but the fact that the signal is changing. In other words, what kind of significance is brought by the commutation of the signal itself. Typically, commutation is correlated to a single event that is important for us to highlight. And in some cases, both the commutations of a signal, that is the rising edge or the falling edge, but also the rising edge together with the falling edge, are significant for the control of a process. In the first case, the commutations could be associated to an event. In the second case, the commutations could be associated to the beginning and the end of an event. So now the part that we are entering is related to the acquisition, to the proper evaluation and elaboration of such a kind of phenomena that go under the name of pulses. Pulses in industrial informatics can be important both in the acquisition phase and in the emission phase from a microprocessor. Pulses can be acquired to evaluate the time, the duration time of a phenomenon, but also to perform the temporization of an action. That particular control action should be performed at that time, and its duration should be exactly this value, temporization. But we will see that the pulses can be associated also to the movement of objects. In particular, they can be used to count how many objects, let's say how many bottles of milk, have been filled during a normal daily production. And again, pulses can be used to evaluate the object position, but also its velocity. In the course of mechatronics, we have seen the usage of the incremental encoder. We will recover very briefly those concepts, and we will go into the details about the acquisition of those values, of those pulses in a microprocessor, and how to count them to establish the entity of the rotation of an object, and with what kind of velocity that position has been assumed. Conversely, we said that pulses can be also emitted from a microprocessor, basically to control the activity of motors. If we consider steps motor, we know that the velocity, the rotation velocity, is proportional to the frequency of the pulses that are sent out by the microprocessor port. Instead, if we consider a direct current motor, we remember that the medium rotation velocity, the average rotation velocity, is proportional to the average voltage that is provided to the motor. And one of the possible ways to do this is controlling the motor itself through a pulse width modulation policy. Finally, we have seen during the course of mechatronics that it is possible to control the power supplied to a load, especially to an electrical load with resistive or inductive nature, through a device that allows us to partialize the power, the voltage that is given to the load. This device is called a silicon controlled rectifier, or in its double wave version, TRIAC, and must be controlled through a pulse or a set of pulses that are sent from a microprocessor or from suitable electronic circuits to its own gate. Let's consider the first situation. In other words, we consider pulses that are acquired and acquired to count objects. The situation can be associated to what can happen into a production line, for example, of a food company. But the example is quite general. Imagine objects that are running on a belt. For example, they are exiting from the engine that produced them, and they are going to the station for the successive packaging. And the problem to count them, to know at the end of the daily production how much we did, how many products have been carried out, can be easily solved by a unit made up by a LED, light emitting diode, and a phototransistor that are continuously in connection through a light beam sent by the LED to the transistor. Clearly, when the object passes in the area into which the two electronic devices are located, the beam is interrupted, and this corresponds to a commutation of a logic signal that can be acquired and counted and evaluated within a microprocessor. Typically, we use a, let's say, hybrid solution to perform the counting. First of all, we need a primary counter into which directly the counting is set, is evaluated. And this should be a non-volatile device. But this depends on the quantity, on the amount, let's say, of objects that has to be counted. In fact, if this number is, let's say, in the usual size of binary values, I mean 32, 64 bits, okay, we can do this, for example, by an hardware counter connected to a microprocessor that periodically reads it. But if this number is greater than the maximum capability provided by an hardware counter, a 32-bit or 64-bit counter, it is necessary to use a, let's say, hybrid solution. That is, the counter continuously runs and acquire the pulses from the process, but periodically when it reaches the overflow, let's say the maximum capability, it sends an interrupt to the microprocessor just to upgrade a second variable. This is what the slide, slide 33, tries to describe. When it says that we need non-volatile counting, and eventually we need secondary counters in powered buffer memories or files. That is, we use hardware counters for the primary counting. We have the upgrading of secondary software counters in the microprocessor when the primary one reaches its own limit. And we need also to store the software value, of the counter, let's say, in something that doesn't disappear when we switch off the power supply, that is buffer memories, powered buffer memories. Of course, it is necessary a trade-off between the freshness and the CPU overload. This is the reason why we are using an hardware counter. If the number of the object is high, but specifically, if the frequency with which this number must be upgraded is high, we could think to connect the phototransistor to the port of the microprocessor, but this would require a continuous interruption in the activity of the micro itself, just to increase the total counter. This is the reason for which we want to use a primary hardware counter, and only periodically we will go to read the value of the counter from the microprocessor point of view, or eventually, as I said, when the hardware counter reaches its maximum capability, an interrupt request will be sent to the CPU just to inform it that a certain quantity of objects has been counted and the software internal variable must be upgraded. When we say that we need a trade-off, we mean that the frequency of the interrupts or the sampling time with which the CPU reads the counter value just to upgrade its own variable is clearly a compromise between the need to every time having close to the reality internal software value relative to the objects that passed in the production chain. On the other hand, if this upgrading activity is performed too often, the microprocessor will end in doing only this activity. And of course, this is not the best way to use the most important unit that we have in the control chain. So we have to establish an average time that regulates the freshness of the information that is stored inside the microprocessor. Sometimes it's also necessary to foresee the need for reset operations, that is, the hardware counter must be cleared, and this can be done manually, but since in the most of the control chains now everything is automatic, a suitable command is typically sent from the microprocessor to the counter to clear it. And finally, when the micro reads the value of the counter to upgrade its own variable, this operation must be considered as atomic, that is, it cannot be interrupted by anything else, because otherwise the value of such a kind of acquisition internally into the microprocessor could assume values completely random, and for this reason totally unaffordable. In slide 34, the general concept of an hardware primary counter is shown. As we have said, the typical usage of the hardware counter is when we want to make the burden of the CPU lighter, avoiding that it is charged with the continuous acquisition of the signal coming from the phototransistor, or again to avoid that the microprocessor activity is continuously interrupted by an interrupt request due to the commutation on the line bringing the signal coming from the phototransistor and connected to an input pin of the port. In any case, the idea is if the frequency of the physical phenomenon that we are measuring is very high, and we don't want that the microprocessor is dedicated only to this acquisition elaboration, we will use such a kind of device. The figure clearly shows the general philosophy, because it presents the layout of the device, the logic, the layout of the device, that is characterized by an enable signal, an input to which the pulses are sent, a reset command, and a sequence of bits in output that correspond to the capability, the counting capability of the counter itself. One of those bits, or more of them, can be connected to the port or to the specific interrupt line of a CPU. The difference is not trivial in such a case, because if we connect only one bit, this means that a power of 2 times the time into which the pulses arrive, that is, the number of events that will be counted, is 2 power the position of the bit in the sequence, and that this could be considered acceptable or not. Just to make an example, if we are considering the counter has a 7-bit one, the last bit that is shown in the figure will be the 6th one. So if we connect it to the port of a microprocessor, every 64 events we will have an interrupt request. This could be considered correct or not on the basis of what we are counting. So if we are counting objects, the passing of the objects on a production chain, okay, we will upgrade the internal software variable of the CPU with a granularity equal to 64. Or depending on the bit we are choosing, we could have a granularity equal to 128, 256, 4, 32, whatever we decide. But consider that instead of sending to the counter pulses corresponding to objects, we are sending to the counter pulses that correspond to clock intervals. For example, every pulse corresponds to 1 microsecond time interval. This means that internally, the microprocessor will upgrade its own variable, its own, let's say, time granularity, with a power 2 value. For example, 64 microseconds, 128 microseconds, and so on. In other words, the resolution, the granularity with which the time will be regulated and upgraded internally into the microprocessor is not, like usual for us, 1 second, 1 microsecond, or whatever. But the granularity, in this case, the power of 2, we have chosen on the basis of what output bit we connected to the port of the microprocessor. Clearly, this can be easily accepted, but we can also observe that is not very, let's say, typical, is not very usable. Come on, if we want to measure time, we want to measure 1 microsecond, 2 microsecond, 3 microsecond, 4, and so on. This is the reason why, even in such a kind of solution, we will connect not one bit, one output bit every time to the microprocessor. Better, we could think to connect a combination of those bits that will represent the number of pulses that we want to have when correspondingly to the upgrading of the internal software variable into the microprocessor. And of course, this will require a suitable electronic logic that will receive all those bits and will transform them, if the suitable number has been reached, into a unique output signal sent to the interrupt line. But we could do even better. We will see this in a moment. Finally, let's conclude the considerations regarding this slide by observing that if the counter is connected to a microprocessor port, we read a state information. That is, basically we sample the line, and comparing the level every time read, we say, okay, it has changed or not, a commutation took place or not, let's increment the variable or not. Conversely, if the counter is connected to an interrupt line, we read an event information, because the electronic circuits will be sensible to the commutation into the signal, and again, corresponding to the commutation, we will decide if to decrement or increment the software variable inside to the microprocessor in accordance with the convention and the logic that we have established with respect to the arrival of the pulses. Just to anticipate a concept, the interrupt line of which we are talking about could be the pin explicitly devoted into the CPU to receiving interrupts, but we will know that every pin of the port of a generic microprocessor can be configured to be sensible to an edge, and on the basis of an eventual commutation detected, to start an interrupt routine executed into the microprocessor itself. So when we say interrupt line, we can explicitly consider both the devoted line to the interrupt management and every input pin of the port that we have properly configured. In slide 35, a real device is presented. It is a very simple counter, a 4-bit counter, but the logic and the considerations that we can do about it can be easily repeated also for 8-bit or 16-bit devices. First of all, you consider the pins that are called Q, QA, QB, QC, QD, and correspondingly the pins are called A, B, C, and D. Okay. Q means output, so they are those pins that we can read to establish the number of events that has been counted. But of course, we have also the possibility of preset the inputs to the counter. In other words, we can say to the counter that it can or it must count, for example, let's say 8 events. Simply A, B, C, D will be set as 1000. What is the utility of such a kind of possibility? The idea is that when we want to count a precise number of events, we can preload this value internally into the counter, and then to set the counter to perform decrements every time a pulse in input has been received. So I set as a initial value 8, and then the counter will count 7, 6, 5, 4, up to 0. When 0 has been reached, an interrupt request from the counter will go to the port or to the interrupt line of the CPU. This is another way to do what we have said before, when we said observed that to perform a specific counting, we could organize, we could combine the output numbers and giving them an input to a suitable logic electronic circuit that implemented the combination of the bits correspondingly to the number that we want to have as count. This is another way to see to perform the to see the same thing and to perform the same calculation simply by let's say ordering by commanding to the counter an initial value from which the count must be diminished every time up to when it becomes zero. In the pinout of the counter, there are a couple of pins that can be used for such a kind of situation. Specifically, when we cross the zero point, we can use the borrow pin number 13 in the layout of the counter to be connected to the port of the micro, just to say, okay, we have reached the zero, now start the interrupt. Of course, notice that since the counter is typically a free-running counter, when the zero is reached, independently if we are increasing or decreasing the value of the counting, the next value will be the immediately following 1 0. So if we are augmenting after 0, we expect a 1. If we are diminishing after 0, we will expect 15, just to remaining on this 4 bits counter. If the preload, the preset inputs are set, instead of going from 0 to 15, we will pass immediately from 0 to the number that has been set in the ABCD inputs. As we have previously said, there is also the possibility of reset the counter. A pin is explicitly conceived for this, the 14 pin clear. And finally, let's take into account the two pins that specify to the counter if the counting must be done in, let's say, forward direction or backward direction, down and up, 4 and 5. Depending what of them is a set, the counter will increase or decrease the value currently stored. Finally, the load pin number 11 is the command that says to the counter, charge the value configured in the ABCD preset input pins and start to count from that value onward or backward, depending on down and up pins are set. In slide 36, a very easy routine assembly Intel family is presented just to perform the counting for a counter similar to the one that we have seen in the slide shown previously. The only difference is that this is an 8-bit counter instead of 4. First of all, the idea proposed by the code is that we are working in polling. That is, the port input is periodically sampled, and the value read from the 8 pins in this case is used to perform the number of counts, the number of, let's say, pulses that between two different sample intervals have been counted. Of course, the activation of the routine should respect a limit, a constraint, that is, it is necessary that the counter doesn't count beyond its own capability. That is, if n are the bits of the counter, we are required to avoid that the period in the sampling is greater than 2 power n minus 1 time the interval between two pulses. Of course, this correspond to a limit in the frequencies that we can acquire, but on the other hand, since we are talking about a hardware solution, typically this limit is never reached with the normal industrial processes with whom we have to face with. Considering the routine that we are reading, the first operation is a very easy and typical clear of a register. Sub a register from itself means, of course, to put a zero in that register. Since it is an arithmetic operation, it is considered very fast. What it is new for us is the name AX that corresponds to the full accumulator register. Till now we have seen the accumulator only only in one of its own part, AL accumulator low or A edge accumulator high. AX means both the parts into which the accumulator is consisting, and that is 16 bits. The second instruction corresponds to the acquisition of the value of a port, that is the counter is connected to the microprocessor port called porta cont, and the value presently acquired by the port is loaded into the accumulator load. This says to us that the port is an 8-bit one, so it is enough to use only half of the accumulator. And now it is necessary to perform the subtraction between the current value of the accumulator and the memory location, called in this case precedente, that stores the counting value acquired in the previous execution of such a kind of routine. This will allow to evaluate the number of the pulses that have been acquired in the meantime between the previous sample acquisition and the present one. The result of this subtraction will remain in the accumulator, and this is the reason why the next instruction adds the accumulator to the memory location, because in such a kind of microprocessor, and in particular in such a kind of instruction set, the operand that is close to the instruction, that is the first operand, will be also the site of the results. So in the previous case we subtract AL with the precedente, the result is in AL. Now we add precedente to AL, the result will be in precedente. And this is done not to make an useless operation, but to store directly into the memory location precedente the value that have been acquired previously in AL. This is the fastest way to do this, because instead of doing a time-consuming memory access operation, we do the same thing, but by executing an arithmetic operation. So at the end of these two instructions, we have in AL the partial increment or decrement of in the number of the pulses that have been acquired, and in precedente the present acquisition from the counter. Now we have the last two instructions that explain us how to use, how to exploit, if you want, a total secondary counter that is necessary in the case that the number of the pulses is high and exceeds the 16-bit capability. You know, 16 bits means more or less 65,000 events. In a daily production, could be that this is not enough. So we can consider a memory location made up by 4 bytes. 4 bytes, that is 32 bits, will give us enough counting capability, because 32 bits correspond more or less to giga events, giga counts. So we could say that this is quite reasonable. However, the particular microprocessor we are considering is a typical embedded microprocessor. We are familiar with micro that have very big capabilities, gigahertz working frequency, gigabyte addressing spaces. But often this is not the case. And this is not the case because very big processing capabilities mean also high consuming and high dimensions in the chip, that in most or in many embedded applications is not suggested, is not the good thing to take into account. Instead, in many industrial processes into which the control is embedded, we need to limit the power consumption and to assure a real-time processing, but keeping low the frequency, because high working frequency means high power needed by the microprocessor. So this is a typical case with which we are facing, into which we have a 16-bit address bus, so we don't have a very big addressing space, and we have to use tricks like this one to overcome a problem of limited counting, as in this case. So the 4 bytes that will represent the counting value inside the memory of the microprocessor are called, are identified by the label contatore. Contatore in Italian corresponds to counter in English, but they will represent, they will be made of 4 bytes at the address contatore, contatore plus 1, contatore plus 2, and contatore plus 3. These 4 memory locations will constitute, will make the 4 bytes that store the present value of the counter we are using and we want to upgrade. AX, the total accumulator register, will be located, will be sent, better, will be added to the 2 low bytes ones, correspondingly to the location contatore and contatore plus 1. Of course, successive summations after several calls of such a kind of routine could bring the low 16 bits of the contatore memory location to be not enough for the events that have been registered, and this means that when adding the accumulator to those 2 bytes, those 2 memory locations, we can have an overflow. And this is the reason why the last instruction is ADC, that is add with carry. Add with carry to the highest byte, to the highest memory locations, 0. Because add with carry, with add nothing to add a zero means to add nothing to those two bytes, but also the eventual carry flag that has been set if the previous add, the previous sum, produced an overflow. And this is the best way, the best idea to upgrade also the higher bytes in this memory location. And finally, the routine will return to the main code that called it. In such a way, we can perform the upgrading of such a kind of counter, that is an 8-bit counter acquired through an 8-bit port, but using an internal software variable that is 32-bit wide, so assuring a good counting capability for the number of the events that we have to register with our software. In slide 37, similar situation to the one that we have seen before is presented. The only modification, the only difference, is related to the number of the bits of the counter that is greater than those that can be read by a single input instruction involving the port. The figure tries to illustrate, to highlight this concept, and you see that we have the counter. In this case, for example, we can suppose a 16-bit counter. 8-bit are connected to a port, to 8 bits of a port, and the highest part of the counter, of the number provided by the counter, is connected to the other 8 bits of the port of the microprocessor. So we have a 16-bit port, a 16-bit counter. However, the microprocessor can read every time 8 bits. The approach is very comprehensible, I should say, I dare say, and it's very easy, and is based on the repetition of the acquisitions that is done in parts. At first the lowest part of the counter, then the highest part. For the remaining, the code will follow what we have already seen. The routine is called aggiorna contatore, and again the first instruction that is performed is the acquisition, in this case, of the most significant part of the counting value into the accumulator loop. Now we use another register with which the microprocessor is equipped, is the B register, who follows the same philosophy as the accumulator. It is a 16-bit register divided into parts, the highest part and the lowest part. We identify them with the BH and the BL labels. So the first operation is a movement of the accumulator containing the most significant byte of the port into the most significant part of the register B. Then we perform the acquisition of the lowest significant part from the port through the accumulator, and then we move this part in the lowest byte of the register B. And now, a curiosity, we have another acquisition of the most significant part of the port in AL, and we compare this value with the previously one acquired. If it has changed, we repeat the acquisition, we repeat the procedure Otherwise, we continue with the usual elaboration. This is done due to the fact that during the acquisition of the most significant and the lowest significant part of the port, the most significant one could change, and if we don't take care of this, we will have, of course, a wrong value in the register B. So we test again, and eventually we repeat the acquisition. The last five instructions are exactly the same as we have seen in the previous slide. The register B is moved in the accumulator, then the accumulator is subtracted with respect to the location containing the previously acquired value. The difference is added to the previous memory location, so as it is upgraded with the new value, and now finally we have the adding the sum of the accumulator to the 4 bytes stored at the contatore address that contains the 4-byte 32-bit counting value that is considered enough for the number of objects that must be counted in this particular application. Finally, just to conclude our overview on the possible uses of such a kind of hardware counter, primary hardware counter, let's do a few considerations about the possibility that the counting values provided by the counters by the counter will represent not state information but events information. This is in particular the case when the hardware primary counter is used to count the running of the time, that is used as a timer. In this case, every count, every plus one, corresponds to an interval of time, that is to an event. The sequence of these events could run very very fast, or could be not suitable for the processes with which it has to interact. Again, using the example of the time, imagine that we have an oscillator, for example, let's say 1 gigahertz oscillator. That is, it provides a pulse every nanosecond. But it is clear that a frequency of 1 nanosecond could be adequate for the electronic circuits of a very, very high-end microprocessor, but it is not adequate for the temporization of the events of the typical industrial processes. Too fast. It is not necessary to control, for example, a direct current motor or a brushless motor every nanosecond. So we need a method to differentiate, to, let's say, make different, in this case, the time rule, the temporization, and this means that we can keep the 1 gigahertz oscillator, but we need time intervals, let's say time bases, that are more relaxed with respect the 1 nanosecond duration, that is the basis of provided by our oscillator. To reach this aim, this goal, the usage of a counter as a real timer is a good solution, and we could say that the new name of the counter in such a way is prescaler. That is, the counter counts a set of pulses when it reaches a certain level, a certain number that has been preloaded into it. It will send an interrupt request, or let's say an output that will of course correspond to an event with a frequency that is considerably lower than the one provided by the oscillator. The granularity of this pre-scaling depends on the fact that we are using the maximum capability of the counter itself, or if we are using one of the bits that is that are provided in output, or if we want to preload a value and give an interrupt request in output when the counter reaches zero. More or less, these are the same considerations that we did before. In the figure, in the slide 38, we have two examples of possible output frequencies provided by the counter in such a particular operating way. The first corresponds to the frequency of the events in input divided by 2 power n. N is the number, the total number of the bits of the counter. So in this case, we connect the carry bit to the, for example, interrupt line of a micro, or to the clock line of a device that must be synchronized in time with a particular frequency. Just to continue with the example that we had at the beginning, let's imagine, for example, a 10-bit counter. 2 power n is more or less 124. Just to simplify, 1000, sorry. If the input frequency was 1 gigahertz, this correspond to producing slower events. That is, to produce output events, in this case output synchronization commands, with more or less 1 megahertz frequency, 1000 slower than the input one. The second formula that is shown in the slide says us that if we don't connect in output to the micro or to whatever device the carry bit, but if we connect one of the bits in output from the counter, the frequency will be divided by 2 power the order of that bit. So for example, if we have 8 bits in output and we connect the bit number 5, this means that the input frequency originally brought to the counter will be divided by a factor that corresponds to the moment into which that bit will go up, will become 1. That is, if the position is the fifth one after 32 events, 32 counts. And in other words, this corresponds to divide by 32, the original frequency provided in input. Such a kind of solution can be also used to tune an internal clock for the microprocessor. In this case, we have, we implement an hybrid solution made up by a software variable that internally to the microprocessor is upgraded every time the counter provides the so-called pre-scaled information. If we want to improve the granularity of this variable, we have to perform also a direct acquisition from the counter of all the bits of which it is made of, all the bits provided in output, I mean, that will represent a fraction of the granularity represented by the software internal variable. So, for example, let's imagine that we have again a clock, 1 GHz frequency, and a 10 bits counter that when counts 1000 provide an interrupt request to the microprocessor. This means that the internal clock of the microprocessor is upgraded with a rate that is 1000th the frequency of the clock, so every microsecond. Okay, the software internal variable will be 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on, and 1, 2, 3, 4 in units of microseconds. If we acquire the output bits of the counter, the value that will be read will be the fraction part that can be, let's say, joined to the software variable to represent a number that is made by an integer part and a fractional part. So the software internal variable of the microprocessor will be 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on microseconds. The value of the bits provided in output by the counter could be, for example, 323 nanoseconds. So the complete clock provided by this method will be 1 microseconds, let's say, comma 323 nanoseconds, so as to have an integer part with an acceptable granularity represented and internally in the microprocessor and upgraded through the software, and a, let's say, granular part, a fractional part of the magnitude that we want to represent, read directly by the counter output and eventually stored in the microprocessor if a greater accuracy is required for the control of the process itself.